Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
This is Future Proof on News Talk. I'm Jonathan McRae. You're very welcome back to the programme. If you'd like to complain, criticise or contribute to the discussion, you can drop us an email, science@newstalk.com. We get to all of those comments in the podcast. Listen and subscribe for free in the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud. Now, I remember about 15 years ago, I watched a TED Talk by a guy called Anthony Atala, and he was talking about how he was using 3D printers to layer down liver or kidney cells to create a functioning organ. Now, a little bit of hype, I think, was added to that particular TED Talk, but printing actual tissues has really taken off and been refined to an extraordinary degree. We might now see real practical functions in heart tissue. Joining me now is Andrew Daly. He's Associate Professor in Biomedical Engineering at Curram and University of Galway. He's a principal investigator of this project. Welcome to the program, Andrew. This is really, really cool. So just set things up for us, if you don't mind. When we're talking about bioprinting, cells and living materials, what goes into that process?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. So yes, as you correctly mentioned at the start, so this is a field that started about 15 or 20 years ago. And our goal is to print tissues. Specifically, our work is focused on printing heart tissue. So 3D printers are quite similar, 3D bioprinters are quite similar to regular plastic 3D printers. The main difference is the material that we're actually printing. So we use specialized bioinks that mimic tissues in the body, and we can put cells inside these inks and actually print them into three-dimensional constructs that mimic a tissue. So we create inks that are similar to heart tissue. So they have collagen proteins, for example, that cells will naturally recognize and stay alive inside. And in the case of a heart cell, they really need to beat and generate force and to pump blood around the body. So we have to kind of recreate that environment in the materials that we use.
Yeah, talk to me about this bio ink. How exactly does it work? Because you're not printing down cell by cell, right? Because those would just sort of, if you put them in a heap, they would just roll down, right? How do you create the structure required to create tissue with an ink?
Yes, so it's an interesting question. I think a good way to think about it is if you think of toothpaste as a material, it's a paste, right? So as engineers, we would consider that it can change between a liquid and a solid. So you can, like toothpaste, you can extrude it out onto a surface, but it will hold its shape, and you can kind of stack those layers on top of each other. So we actually try and make our bioinks have similar properties to regular materials like toothpaste. And so they will flow through a needle, but kind of they'll stay in place and stack once we've printed them. So that's actually a key part of the process. And it has been a big challenge in bioprinting and organ printing over the last few years. But we've now got a lot of materials and inks that can be printed quite accurately with cells inside them.
I'm imagining sort of jelly, hydrogels and jelly and that sort of a substance as a substrate. Is that about right?
Exactly. They're gels. And Exactly. They're gels, and the gel is formed from collagen. So they're actually similar to our tissues. It's not quite the same density of collagen. It's a little bit less. But once the cells are kind of enter that environment, they recognize it and they can kind of survive and grow and proliferate. And in the case of heart cells, they will actually start beating, and we see that in our tissues.
Okay, so that's kind of crazy. I'll get to that in a second. But just to nerd out a little bit more on this ink. So you have this gel, and then do you put the cells in themselves, or do you put the gel in the body and the cells sort of naturally inhabit it, like, you know, if you're to put a hamster wheel in a hamster cage?
Yeah, so we mix them in very gently. So our cells are naturally in a liquid when we kind of grow them, or in cell culture media. And we grow them up in like high quantities, hundreds of millions in certain cases. And then we add that kind of gel on top very slowly and gently to kind of keep them alive and not burst them, essentially. And they can then kind of maintain their viability kind of inside that gel. Yeah.
Right. So I get that. And I can imagine how that might work. What I'm struggling to understand is how do you make something like a muscle or something that would work on a heart? Because as you were saying, you know, the heart, it's a very active organ compared to others, and it moves around a lot. So if you have a squidgy sort of a gel, that's just going to like dissolve, isn't it?
Yep, it's a great question. So yeah, printing the gel is the first part of the process. And we then take that structure that's been printed out of a gel, and we maintain it in the lab for weeks. And in this case, we actually cultured them for up to 10, by culture, I mean maintain in an environment that's 37 degrees. And we provide the cells with nutrients to keep them alive. And the cells start growing and proliferating. So what gradually happens is the cells start filling out that gel and filling out that volume, and they slowly turn from kind of individual cells into like a collective tissue. And so we see that the...
Wow, that must be so weird to see a sort of heart tissue materialize in an agar plate in front of you.
Yes, so it takes about 3 or 4 days before we start seeing the first kind of signs of contraction or beating. So typically...
So how does that work? I mean, these haven't been connected to a heart. I mean, are they stem cells that have been taught to be heart tissues, or are they actually heart tissues?
So we're actually deriving them ourselves from stem cells. So we're using induced pluripotent stem cells. And so they can be taken from, say, our skin, so fibroblasts on the skin. They're then de-differentiated, which means they're kind of turned back into a stem cell, and then we can turn them back from a stem cell into a heart cell.
That's so crazy. So yeah. when they're on our skin, the stem cells that they started out as, they got these sort of chemical signals around them that told them you need to be a skin cell because you're on the skin. We take those cells off, we undo that learning so they're back to blank pieces, essentially, make them heart cells, put them in this gel, and then after a while, they just start beating.
Exactly. That's the process. This field has a lot of potential for lots of organs. Obviously, you can create heart cells. As you mentioned, Anthony Atala has previously worked on creating liver or bladder tissue. So yeah, exactly. The cell source can be used for all organs.
But if the organ, the organ is a specific shape and structure, right? Can you just like stick this on onto a plaster, Like, I guess if you say, for example, if you had to cut something out of a heart, you know, if there was some sort of trauma and you had to get rid of tissue that died or something, could you just stick this on and it would start to stitch together? Or
yes, so it's it's a patch, essentially. So we can print something that has the shape of an adult heart, but we can also print smaller structures, say a patch that could be placed on the outside of the heart.
You couldn't make a whole adult heart, though.
We could print something that has that shape and it will beat, but it doesn't have all of the same functionalities. For example, it doesn't have
the vasculature is a problem.
Exactly, yes. So the
blood flow and all that's tricky, but if you're talking about purely the muscle heart tissues, that's the stuff that is really important for a function, but right. also is not as complicated. So if you have the right environment and you've got the right, you've cultured enough and it's ready to grow and attach, it essentially just slots into place.
Yes. So in for clinically, you know, these implants have the most potential for people who are suffering from heart failure. Mm. And you know, with heart failure, there's very few therapeutic options. And it's difficult to regenerate the heart. I mean, it's impossible. So the idea is that these implants could be patched on to the outside of the heart to provide some extra beating force or contractile function. And so there are clinical trials ongoing with that. For example, taking stem cell derived heart cells, injecting them into the heart wall. And there was a recent high profile kind of result with a patient who had end stage heart failure, and they were able to use that patch to kind of maintain her heart function for a certain period of time before she was then able to find a replacement heart transplant.
When you say patch, do you have to stitch this into place? How do you keep it there so it binds, so to speak?
Yeah. So there's a few different strategies. There's kind of adhesive materials for it's like a glue, a biological glue, or surgeons in certain places can stitch it. As you say, it's obviously difficult with heart tissue, but there are obviously very skilled surgeons.
Yeah. We've been talking about stem cells for obviously decades. And I always thought that, oh, wow, now we have stem cells. When I was younger and knew less, I thought that you could just inject the stem cells into the site and just wait. And then Bob's your father's brother. But that's not, that doesn't work like that. You need this structure and gel to actually have something for them to grow on.
Yeah. So in the case of the heart, there have been clinical trials on injecting kind of stem cells that are they're not specifically turned into heart cells. And the idea is that they could initiate repair, or maybe in the body could then turn into real heart muscle. But there are challenges with that. For example, the cells may not go to the right place. They may not be able to stay in the right location.
Or they could turn into something else, right? They could turn into non-heart cells. That would be a problem.
Exactly. So it's a more challenging process. And what we're working on is actually creating the muscle in the lab first and growing it and making it more mature or more adult-like, because stem cell-derived heart cells are very immature, and they're more like kind of heart cells when we're young and when our heart is developing. So they beat and they contract, but it's quite weak, for example. So we're really focusing on making them more adult-like and maturing them. And obviously, if we implant that kind of muscle back into the body, it should have more function.
Right. That's so cool. When you're getting these skin cells, presumably it's better to get them from the patient you're treating, but do you need to?
So that's an interesting question, yeah. So there's autologous stem cells, which is where they would be derived originally from the person's own skin cells. And our approaches we're starting using what's called allogeneic in our field, but that just means they could be taken from another adult and turned back into heart cells that way. So that's not quite known. There are clinical trials ongoing with allogeneic stem cells and haven't been serious immune issues. So for example, the body has accepted them.
Yeah.
But it is something that, you know, does need to...
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Weird.
If you could just make stem cells from anybody, you could have a stem cell donor, we have a blood donor. And then just a final question, I guess. You said clinical trials are underway. Like, have we proven this in animal models then? Have we seen that this patch on a heart will actually lead to better heart function and repairing heart damage from a heart attack or something like that?
Yeah, so there has been lots of progress in animal trials. So for example, like heart muscle can integrate with heart if it's been patched on. One of the challenges is getting them to electrically kind of integrate. So often
and the heart would be beating at a different rate than the patch. So they don't integrate together. And that actually can cause issues like arrhythmia.
Doesn't that coordination come from the, is it the bundle of His? Is that what it's called? That regulates the tempo of the
neuro cells, you know, that can come in and kind of regulate that birth rate.
So the electrical, sort of the composer, making sure everyone's in time. That's actually one of the challenges. Okay, really interesting. Really, really cool. This is incredible research from Andrew Daly's team at the University of Galway. He's the principal investigator at Curram and the University of Galway, talking about bioprinting heart tissues to try and repair damaged hearts. It's a long way from being in the hospital, but not as far as you might think. Andrew, the very best of luck with the research, and thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you.
So we were talking last week about memories and how memories that we have that are new don't overwrite old memories. And Laura says, what if it's a triggering memory, one that causes you distress? Doesn't your brain try to overwrite that? That's a good question. I don't know if there's a conscious process of trying to overwrite bad memories. I don't think we want to forget bad memories because... From an evolutionary point of view, bad memories of things that happened help us avoid those things in the future is my gut on it. But we'll ask Antonio. Another person asks, how associated is the sensory experience, smells, etc., with how strong the memory is, or is it more about the people in the memory? Senses and memory are linked. I don't think there's an enormous amount of great evidence that would suggest that if something smelled really strongly, you're much more likely to remember it, but I would have a gut feeling that it might. But I did a quick look there and it doesn't seem to be an enormous amount of research on, you know, if it's a really multisensorial experience, how well you remember something. Kind of imagine if you feel a particular sensation pretty strongly, you're going to remember that much better, right? That certainly is my experience, for good and for bad. That's it from us on this week's episode. Thanks to Marisa Sullivan, Rory Galvin, and Hugo da Silva on sound. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more Future Proof in your podcast feed on Tuesday. In the meantime, stay curious.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae,
proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.